This is Rush to Reason.
You are going to shut your damn yapper and listen for a change, because I got you pegged, sweetheart. You want to take the easy way out because you're scared. And you're scared because if you try and fail, there's only you to blame. Let me break this down for you. Life is scary. Get used to it. There are no magical fixes.
With your host, John Rush.
My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir.
You haven't made everybody equal. You've made them the same, and there's a big difference.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know, you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
Are you crazy? Am I? Or am I so sane that you just blew your mind?
It's Rush to Reason with your host, John Rush. Presented by High Five Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric, where every call ends with a high five.
All right, we're back. Hour number three, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Myself, Andy Pate, Charlie Grimes, of course, and our next guest, John Kufis, joining us. John, welcome. How are you?
I'm well. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. And this is a story that until I learned of you and, you know, had a press release on you wanting to come on air, I knew nothing about. And this is this Japanese gang leader that has pled guilty to trafficking nuclear materials to Iran. I bet most people don't know anything about that.
Yeah, you know, it was a shock, I think, to everybody. So in the Southern District of New York, the Drug Enforcement Administration had initiated just what I would say is a run-of-the-mill cartel investigation into fentanyl, heroin, and methamphetamine trafficking. And what they found was there was so much more there. So the Yakuza, right, the Japanese organized crime gang, who, you know, well known for human trafficking, drug trafficking, etc., began to represent that they could get nuclear material that could be enriched into weapons-grade uranium from Burma to Thailand and over to Iran to make a nuclear weapon.
Okay.
Well, why run it through here? I don't understand.
Well, it didn't. The issue was that the nuclear material itself didn't necessarily cross American borders in that way. The transactions came here. But the scary part in this, the really scary part here, is that, again, we have the Drug Enforcement Administration really doing a bang-up great job on this. Remember, the Drug Enforcement Administration is there to interdict drug cartels, drug trafficking. But time and time again, they find themselves foiling terrorism plots. So let's go back a couple of years, if you remember the Victor Boot case. Remember Victor Boot, the merchant of death,
right.
The Russian
arms dealer.
Right? Arms dealer was traded for the basketball star.
We traded her for Griner.
Yes, exactly. So that also
we
began.
Lost that deal.
Yeah, that was not a good deal, John.
Just so you know, not a good deal. But continue.
I agree. But in that case, what had happened was, right, the DEA was investigating drug cartels in Colombia. And then they learned they wanted all these military-grade weapons. But let me tell you this, the fascinating part about this, the nuclear part is obviously the big part, and going to Iran, who's been a sponsor of terrorism since 1984. But when you talk about the laundry list of weaponry that was purported for sale to these Iranians, we're talking about 5,000 AK-47s, 1 million rounds, 2 million rounds.
Wow.
Another 5,000 M-16s, 20 portable surface-to-air missiles, but only if they're reloadable. 1,000 rockets. I'm reading right from the indictment right now. And at least 20 mortars. And actually, if you count up the different size of the rockets, it's 3,000 rockets. So, you know, the Yakuza was ready to arm, you know, a great enemy of America. And I think that as a country, what I think this really reinforces for us is sometimes people think, well, why are we fighting the war on drugs, right? At least at the cartel and trafficking level.
Right.
And the issue, I'm not talking about marijuana on the street or something like that. I'm talking about large scale, you know, professional shipping companies that are cartels. And it's because these cartels are time and time again involved in things that are just so much worse than heroin itself.
Yeah, these guys, as you know, John, and I don't think that, you know, the movies even depict some of this stuff as accurately as they could. I mean, these guys are in the money business, and if they can make money moving something other than drugs and, for example, human trafficking and the like, they will move whatever they can. They are not immune from any of that, are they?
No, they are not. And the fascinating part is that the gentleman, Takeshi Ibasawa, who was the Yakuza leader who was arrested for this, you know, his knowledge of uranium enrichment, you know, was borderline Albert Einstein science level. He knew exactly how much
I see that.
That you had to hit. He had a 5 to 20% enrichment. Yeah, he knew exactly how it would be enriched. He knew exactly how the Geiger counters would go. So that's got to tell me that this isn't the first time he's tried to make a sale like this. You know, at least that would be my guess. And I'll tell you, the one thing that is really sort of I can't figure out in this case is, so, you know, it looks like the government has him dead to rights. And when you look at what he was charged with versus what he pled out to, there's one charge missing, and it's the conspiracy to acquire, transfer, and possess surface-to-air missiles. And ironically, gentlemen, that's the only one of those crimes with a mandatory minimum of 25 years. The rest are mandatory minimums of, say, 10 to life if you took his whole range.
Mm-hmm. So why'd they take that off?
I can't figure that part out. I got to be honest with you. I don't know. Maybe that was just to avoid a trial. And you know, because remember, if Ibasawa goes to trial, right, he's going to want to know who all the confidential sources are and really try to disclose identity undercover. But if it's not something like that, I mean, I don't know. Because why would you plead the guy out to something that'll put him behind bars for a minimum mandatory of 25 years? And for your listeners, you know, in the federal system, when you have charges like this, you do about 86-87% of that time. There's no parole in the feds, okay. And it's not subject to the First Step Act. So you're talking about day for day on 25 years, whatever, 19 years or so,
right.
Day for day. And with these charges, he's probably going to your neck of the woods out in Florence,
mm-hmm.
Colorado.
Yeah.
Hey, John. Yeah. If I can look at the other end of the transaction here, Iran, where'd they get all that money? Gee, I thought Trump froze those assets because this was a lot of money that they needed to buy this.
They sure did. I mean, the first 50 metric tons, they were talking about $6.85 million for that, and then they were talking about many, many, many multiples of that. In this indictment, you know, it's not clear, and it's purposely not clear to cover up to not make sure we don't disclose confidential sources.
Right.
Who was from Iran and who was one of our confidential sources posing as an Iranian general, right? But make no mistake, the money was there and the transaction was ready. And in fact, they were hiding yellow cake, you know, the byproduct, mm-hmm. which is really uranium oxide that comes when you want to prep uranium for enrichment. They had the yellow cake stored in an office in Bangkok, Thailand, right? When the Thai police go in there, this office, I mean, imagine if you're the guy renting the office next to them and you find out there's a bunch of yellow cake in there. But they go in and they take the yellow cake. Then they determine that it was absolutely weapons grade for Iran, who, as you know, sponsors everyone who hates us. They sponsor.
And for all of you listening, too, John, you've got quite a history when it comes to, you know, just gang related organized crime and so on. Give folks a little bit of your background in all of that as well.
Sure. So for about 10 years, I was a gang and organized crime lawyer in New Jersey, my home state, which, you know, I'm sure your listeners have lots and lots of jokes about any kind of gang lawyer from New Jersey. They probably figure everybody from New Jersey must be a gang lawyer, given our poor reputation in that way. But I spent a career defending.
John, really quick here, do you count your trunk as seating for your car?
It depends, only for clients that didn't pay.
Gotcha. Okay, but, just checking.
But yeah, I mean, I did a lot of wiretap cases, some international cases, etc. So, you know, this is just something I was these kind of things heavily involved in, and I'll tell you. You know, as a defense lawyer, the DEA cases, the DEA cases of this magnitude were always the hardest as a defense lawyer. I mean, those guys really have their act together. And when they put it together on you, it's usually tight.
Hmm. How, I mean, okay, just a side note. How do you defend against all of that? You just have to find where the holes are, or what do you do there?
Yeah, so it depends. Like, you know, in many cases, wiretaps are used, right? So there's a whole procedure to try to knock out the wiretap. But I think in most of these cases, you know, when they have you on camera or they have you recorded, what you're really, the only strategy you have almost is to draw the thing out and hope that they relied on confidential informants who then, you know, some of these confidential informants, in fact, many of them are, you know, involved in illicit activities.
Yeah, they're criminals themselves.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, you hope they step in it, as they say, in some other fashion,
and it
gives you some leverage here or there.
Got it.
But I think that, what you're doing is usually try to handle the electronic evidence. What's really interesting to me, gentlemen, is that there's only two defendants in this indictment, right? There's three unindicted co-conspirators, but they only named two, Ebisawa and a gentleman named Sampath Singhasiri, who was involved more in the drug aspect. So if the Yakuza, since the Yakuza is moving nuclear material with Ebisawa, where are all the other people that helped, right? Where are all the other people in this transaction? So that tells me they're either the unindicted co-conspirators, they rolled, or they had some other level of cooperation. And the important part was to take out the head, which it sounds like the D did.
Given the fact that you've been inside the Trump administration in the past, what do you predict are some of the first things Trump does, not just in general, but along these lines when it comes to protecting America? What do you think some of the things he does right off the bat?
Yeah, I think border security is going to be number one. And candidly, cases like this really underscore that, right? Because as the drug if the drug cartels can come through an open border, so can everybody else.
Yeah.
And who knows who they're going to bring, right? And so I think that is number one. And I think that's why a strong border and drug trafficking policy go hand in hand. You can't separate the two. I think you're going to see that really front and center. I think there is talk of declaring some of the drug cartel or organized crime organizations as either as material supporters of terrorism or terrorist groups. I think in the broader criminal justice from a broader criminal justice perspective, I think we're going to see a lot of clemencies, candidly, have nothing to do with the case we're talking about. But Trump has talked extensively about using the power of clemency to remedy some of his, of the wrongs he perceives may have happened through the court system. And I think now he knows, obviously, what it's like to be a defendant in a case. And I think
right.
he has a unique perspective on governmental overreach.
Good point. John, it's been a joy. How do folks find more about you?
Yeah, you can go on my website, which is cottage4.com, or find me on Twitter at JGKufos.
Awesome. John, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for your insight.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Appreciate it very much.
This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.